Dennis Prager, welcome. I'm in a great mood. I'm usually in a great mood. I'm blessed. Also, I work on it, but that's, you got to read my happiness book. Actually, you don't have to read my happiness book. It's important to aim to be happy and to act it even if you don't feel it, because then you'll feel it. And anyway, it's better for other people because people like to be around happy people. I don't know if I've even addressed that on one of the fireside chats. It's such a big theme in my life, but that's for another time. On behalf of Otto, welcome. Special dog. He's so special that people ask me about him now when they, you know, bump into me at airports or whatever. I was just in Montreal giving a speech, and a woman who came to the speech showed me on her phone she has a picture of Otto from the fireside chat. And why does she carry it around with her? Because it relaxes her. Isn't that something? My dog in L.A. relaxes this woman in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. That's the world we live in. There could be good things and bad things on the internet. Anyway, welcome. This is a chance for me to just think aloud with you. There's nothing rehearsed. There's no teleprompter. There's no rehearsal. It's completely spontaneous. I take questions from you after I offer you some thoughts. So welcome to my home. Some thoughts. At this speech in Montreal, there was a young girl, maybe eight to 10 years old. And she got up and she asked me about global warming, climate change, whatever the current term might be. And I wish I recorded my response. I record 99% of my speeches, and I didn't record this one in Montreal for whatever reason. But I should have, because the response I gave her elicited a prolonged ovation from the audience. I don't speak for ovations, but I felt at that moment that their spontaneous applause came from deep, deep passion. They were so happy to hear somebody tell a kid, don't worry. And that's what I want to talk about. When I see all these young kids around the world, actually, not just the United States, around the world, and they are worried and angry. They don't think they have a future. I played on my radio show a clip from a girl. I was 8 years old. Said, "We're gonna die." And I was thinking, and I said this on my show because it was the happiness hour when I just deal with the issue of happiness. And I said, you know, this is the first generation in American history where the kids are worried about dying, have a dark vision of the future. Kids in the Civil War didn't. Kids in World War I didn't. Kids in World War II didn't. Kids during the Cold War didn't. Isn't that astonishing? This is the only generation, and I totally blame the adults. I don't blame the adults for inaction on global warming. I blame the adults who scare children. Shame on you. You will have to answer before the creator of the universe, who judges people for what you did in scaring this next generation of kids, so many of whom are not only scared, but think, oh, why should I have a family? My kids will die anyway, which it's beyond belief. This has never happened. Jews whose families, whole families, parents, grandparents, cousins, brothers, sisters, children, were slaughtered by the Nazis in the Holocaust, they went on to have children. They went on to believe there is a good future. And if anybody should have been cynical and not had a family, it would have been them. And then kids living in the freest, most affluent times in the history of the world, materially the best childhood in human history, they're worried about dropping dead because the earth is getting warmer? Sick adults have scared them. Sick, poisoned, angry, ignorant adults have done this. I'm not denying the world is getting warmer. If it's getting warmer, it's getting warmer. Truth is truth. I'm committed to truth before any other value. But this is hysteria. Hysteria that you're going to die, that this is an existential crisis. If there are two things that prove it's not existential. Three things. One is the how long we've been told it's an existential crisis. I'll get to that in a moment. Two, all these rich people who are the elite that are the most scared, why do they have oceanfront and seafront properties? How come they're not all selling their properties on the eastern seaboard of America or the western seaboard of America? There's still a fortune of money to have a seaside property in Florida. Why? If they really believe the ocean is going to engulf them, that sell while you can, man. Sell while there's another sucker out there who's going to buy your property. Why aren't you selling? Nobody's acting except to impose draconian laws. They don't act in their own life as if they believe it. Except for straws. Oh, that's a big one. California can't have plastic straws. That's our commitment. I'll tell you about the previous predictions. Then there's the seaside property, and then there's nuclear power. Nuclear power is completely, quote-unquote, clean. Clean. It's as safe an energy source as exists on Earth. Anyone who says that carbon emissions constitute an existential crisis and doesn't advocate nuclear power is a fraud. F-R-A-U-D, I'll spell it out for you. It would be as if saying, you know, I'm drowning. So somebody sends me a boat. And I say, you know what? I just don't like that boat. If I said that or you said that, wouldn't it mean I don't believe I'm drowning? If I really believed I'm drowning, would I really reject the boat that came along and gave me a life preserver? If you really believe we have an existential threat to life and you're not for nuclear power, France gets 71% of its electricity. 71% from nuclear power. What's wrong with that? That's France. 40% in Sweden. Soon it's half. It's hysteria. Those prove it's hysteria. Here, this was the first argument. Ready? This is from 1989, Associated Press. I think it's the biggest world news organization. UN predicts disaster if global warming not checked. United Nations, AP. A senior UN environmental, June 29th, 1989. A senior UN environmental official says entire nations could be wiped off the face of the earth by rising sea levels if the global warming trend is not reversed by the year 2000. Guess what? We're way beyond the year 2000, and it hasn't happened, has it? Every few years, I hear, we got X number of years to go. I'll give you more. Coastal flooding and crop failures would create an exodus of eco-refugees, threatening political chaos, said Noel Brown, director of the New York Office of the United Nations Environment Program, or UNEP. He said governments have a 10-year window of opportunity to solve the greenhouse effect before it goes beyond human control. As the warming melts polar ice caps, ocean levels will rise by up to 3 feet, enough to cover the Maldives. I was just in the Maldives. They're not covered. And I was in the Maldives 30 years or 29 years after this prediction of 10 years. Enough to cover the Maldives and other flat island nations, Brown told the Associated Press in an interview on Wednesday. It's every 12 years, we have 12 more years till the world drowns. You kids who are losing sleep over this, it is in my opinion, and I'm sorry to say this because I want you to love and respect your parents, and I'm not blaming your parents, but some adult is responsible for your fear. Adults should not be putting fears in children. That's the opposite role. An adult is supposed to protect children from fear, not inculcate fear in children. It's a form of child abuse. That's how I look at it. These kids screaming these things, it's mind-blowing. This has never happened before in far worse times. So, kids, somebody's misled you. Either me or some other adult. That's correct. But I just gave you three powerful arguments that you're being misled. I'm not saying they're doing it deliberately, but it doesn't matter. They're scaring you deliberately. And that to me is indefensible. Okay? Got that out of my system. Time for Q&A from the... All right, here we go. First is a video question, which, by the way, I like this idea. It's fun for you watching to see who's asking the question. So wherever you might be, it's almost as easy to send your question via video as it is via, what is it, email normally done? Yeah? So let's give it a thought. I don't want to in any way discourage the email, obviously. I'm just encouraging you to add that. I think you should do both, but it's totally up to you. But it's fun. I mean, people like it. So if I press this, nothing happens. Ah, something happened. Here we go. All right, take it away.
Hey, Dennis, I'm Spencer. I'm 20 from Pacific Palisades, and I have a really interesting question for you. What are your thoughts on solely taking education online?
Thank you, Spencer. Pacific Palisades is in the Los Angeles area. So he's sort of a neighbor. And thank you for that. I have no problem with it. My stepson is truly, truly gifted in the area of IT and computers and anything electronic and building. I mean, he really is gifted. And he learned it all on computer, all on the internet. He's got a full-time job. He's in demand. In fact, it's so funny because whoever comes to the house and ever, or for years, whoever do work here, they would get to meet him and then they would want to hire him. It was actually funny because he is talented, but he learned it. He's an autodidact, which means self-taught. He's an autodidact via computer. Given the state of our colleges, high schools, and elementary schools, I actually think it's a healthy choice. Just make sure that you find friends and stuff, because you have to, it's critical to relate to people. All right, Matty is 33 in Vancouver. How you doing? Dennis, I'm worried that I'm going bald, and I see a lot of guys who try to cover it up or delay it. But my wife thinks, did I say he's 33? Did I already say that? Good. But anyway, I'm proud of you, married by 33. It's the right decision. But my wife thinks it's better when men just embrace it and buzz their hair. You've got a fantastic head of hair, so I guess it's not a problem you've had to worry about for yourself. That's correct. But I'd be curious to know what you think about this. But I do think about this. I try to think about everything. So listen to this. So, but I think your wife is right, by the way. I do think. But if a guy wants to work out a way to get here, if indeed it works, I'm also for that. There's no right or wrong in this. I just want to reassure, though, men who are losing their hair, this is not what turns women on or off. Okay? Men are so visually oriented that they think that women are as visually oriented as they are. Of course, women are visually oriented. They know a really good-looking man, and I get that, but it's not comparable, all right? It just isn't. And if you're masculine, that's number one. Strong, masculine, and kind, and work hard. On a list, if I put masculine, kind, works hard, and has or has not hair, has or has not hair, would and I have my hair, so I have no vested interest here. But I'm telling you, that would rank last. I did it. I did a show, actually. I've learned so much because I could bounce off any idea off millions of people. So many listeners I've had for decades. So I raised this idea on my male female hour. How does baldness strike you women? And they called in, and it was amazing to a lot of bald men. Most didn't care. You know, there were so many more issues in whether he was attractive, a man was attractive to her. You know, did he stay relatively in shape? But the masculinity was the biggest. Women want masculine men, whatever masculine means. I mean, I have my own working definition of it, which is strong. That's it. That he has strength. That doesn't mean that he is a tyrant, but he has strength, and it radiates from him. Charm, personality. Money. I mean, let's be honest. Guy has money as an advantage. There's no question about that. Okay. Woman has looks. Man has money. They're built-in advantages. They're not enough, but they're built-in advantages. That is correct. But the notion that you're bald, and that, you know, and it rules you out or anything close to that is just not true. So that's what I learned from women. And by the way, I mean, a lot of guys actually look terrific, as you know. In fact, I've even joked, I have all my hair, my luck, now bald is in. So, okay. All right, let's see here. Next. Laurel 59, Hurricane, Utah. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for shining a cheerful, hopeful light in the world. I'm glad you feel that way. That's what I would like to do. With all your traveling, do you have strategies for reducing jet lag? Yes, believe me. I could write a mini book on the thought. So, the number one rule is do not, capital D, capital N, do not go to sleep in the place you arrive if it's daytime, even if you're dead, because then you will stay on your original time for the whole trip. So if you arrive at noon, all right, you've traveled halfway around the world and you've arrived at noon, you're zonked. Okay, if you take a 1 hour nap so you could at least function, okay, but not more than an hour nap. Then you go to bed when the sun sets, which is still earlier than you would go to bed normally. That's fine. Go to bed at, let's say, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock. That's fine. But if you go to bed at noon and then you wake up at seven, you're doomed because you're not going to be tired at 7 p.m. or at midnight. So that's rule number one. Rule number two is try to get sleep on the plane. That's a big one in my life. I try. I don't have to try. I'm so relaxed on airplanes. I may see 2% of the takeoffs of my airplanes. I fall asleep prior to the takeoff, and it's extremely helpful to me in getting to my new my destination. So it depends obviously on the time zone issue. In the United States, if you're going West Coast to East Coast, so you will arrive at, you have a 9 a.m. flight, so you will arrive on the East Coast at 5 p.m. if it's a nonstop flight because of the time zone difference. So that's, then you will be tired. You may not be tired by midnight because that's only 9 p.m. on the West Coast. So therefore, it might be advisable in that case to take a very early flight or get less sleep the night before on the West Coast, so you will get tired earlier on the East Coast. Think in advance. Another thing psychologically, change your watch as soon as you get on the plane. Put your brain and mind on the new time that you're going to. Okay? Is that good? Good. The rest is luck. I'm very lucky. I fall asleep anywhere I go. I wake up anywhere I go. I'm very lucky. All right, let's see here. Yael, 17, Los Angeles, Prager Force. Thank you for being in Prager Force. Hi, Mr. Prager. I had the honor of meeting you a few weeks ago at the PragerU Gala. What's your suggestion on fighting anti-Semitism as it grows rapidly and comes from all sides of the political spectrum? Any advice? Well, in America, at least, it mostly comes from the left. The Jews on campuses are harassed by leftists, not by rightists. So even though you say all sides of the spectrum, it's more one than the other right now. As Alan Dershowitz, who is a liberal, a Democrat, and a Jew, said to me in the, and you will see it in the film No Safe Spaces, which I strongly urge you to go when it comes out in movie theaters. Adam Carolla and I are the quote-unquote stars, but the reason it's great is not because I'm in it, or Adam in it, and he's terrific. It's a great film, period. Alan Dershowitz says to me in his apartment, as an American, as a liberal, as a Democrat, as a Jew, I am more afraid of the left than the right. Okay? And that's a lifelong, and a Hillary Clinton supporter. It has to be fought. It has to be fought by non-Jews. Just as I spend a good deal of my time defending Christians, non-Jews have to spend a lot of time defending Jews, and they have to call it out when it's there. And Israel hatred, not Israel criticism, Israel hatred, is anti-Semitism. If the country, if 210 countries in the world, the one you hate the most is the Jewish state, you're sick. There's something wrong with your moral compass. Okay? It's a pretty wonderful place, actually. You've picked on it because it's Jewish, not because it's bad. Iran is bad. North Korea is bad. Russia is pretty bad. China is bad. Okay, that's bad. Not the Chinese, not the Russians. I'm talking about the governments. Robert in 19, San Antonio. How's our time, by the way?
23 minutes in.
Robert 19, San Antonio, Texas. Does Dennis Prager like to gamble? Well, let me ask him. Dennis, do you like to gamble? No, I don't. I have nothing against it, by the way. I mean, I have against anything that, hurts your life. You know, there are people who have gambled away their life savings and then their family savings and ruined families and ruined marriages. But otherwise, if you want to gamble, have a good time. I just don't find it interesting. And I'll tell you why, because I know a lot about this. I've been to Vegas many, many times, for example. So I learned this. The trick is to learn yourself and learn your nature. Sometimes you have to work with it and sometimes you have to work against it. So I realized very early on one of my first trips to Las Vegas in my 20s, I realized it bothered me much more to lose $50 than it made joy in my life to win $50. That's why I stopped. I'm a big one on happiness. I've always wanted to be happy. I really hate unhappiness. And I realized there's no comparison. I was much unhappier losing 50 than I was happy winning 50. But that was it. Because if I lost 50, I think, oh God, what I could have bought with that $50 and enjoyed, and now I'm out. But if I won $50, I didn't think, whoa, look at what I could buy with $50. So, and anyway, I didn't get the thrill. People get a thrill, and that's fine with me. I'm not against it. The human being is not perfect. I am not in the business of making saints. I'm in the business of fighting evil. It's a big difference. That's a subject I ought to talk about. What I really want from people. I don't expect people to be saintly. I expect them to sin on little issues. First of all, I don't consider that a sin, but I'm just saying it doesn't bother me. I would care if you gambled your family's money away. You know, there is a Twilight Zone episode. Twilight Zone was one of the most brilliant television. What do you call something that has episodes each week? Series? Yeah. It was profound and profoundly moral, every episode. The Twilight Zone may have been the best thing ever on American television, but I'm not a great connoisseur of TV, so I may be wrong. But anyway, that's my experience. One of the episodes is about a guy who was a gambling addict. And you get a sense of how awful it is because the slot machines start talking to him. They seduce him like a beautiful woman would seduce a man. The slot machine would seduce him. And by the way, for a gambling addict, it probably is more powerful than the sex drive. It's very, very powerful. And that's why there's Gamblers Anonymous, and this is a very serious thing, the gambling addiction. It's huge in Asia, huge. Whatever increases adrenaline can be addictive. You can get addicted to the adrenaline rush. That's what people love. And I don't have an adrenaline rush in gambling. I've never had to fight it. It doesn't matter to me. And by the way, I learned how to win at blackjack, just for the record. I want you to know, if the dealer is four decks or more, I could probably, over the long run, win at blackjack. Because I know blackjack strategy, I know counting cards, and so on. After four decks, the house has the huge advantage. Some of you have no idea what I'm talking about right now, but those of you who do know, I know what I'm talking about. Okay, that's it. Next. All right, we lost our place here. I'm getting to the next one. All right, now this is ironic. Parker 15, the age is important here. New Knoxville, Ohio, USA. What are your thoughts on the idea of climate alarmism even as early as middle school? Shame on the teachers, shame on the school. That's what I think. And I explained that why in the beginning. You're living at a wonderful time. There is less human starvation, there is less human misery physically today than there has been in recorded history. And all we're hearing about is how everything is going downhill. Maybe people need alarmism. You know what? Alarmism gives you an adrenaline rush like gambling does. I think people are addicted to hysteria. I mean that literally. They go from hysteria to hysteria. When I was a kid, I was told ZPG, zero population growth. There won't be enough food to feed all the people. None of you should have children. There's more food than ever. What's the time frame?
29 and a half.
Okay, then I think we're good. I got more here. I'm going to take obviously another time. They're really good questions. This is a lot to me. Yeah, we have time for one more.
You can take one.
Scott, 17, Beaverton, Oregon. What is your opinion on video games when it comes to violence? Do you believe that violent games directly contribute to real-world criminal activity? I could be persuaded that it does if people showed me data that I found to be compelling, but I personally don't believe that. People have said that pornography leads to rape. I've seen no proof of that. It's not a defense of pornography any more than this is a defense of violent video games, which I don't like. And I, for that matter, I don't like video games. If it takes too much of a person's time, I don't care if it takes a little time. If it's in moderation, like gambling, I have no reaction to it. But we have to tell the truth. You can't be opposed to something and then make up how evil it is. That's not right. The right can't do it. The left can't do it. I've been saying this about pornography for a long time. There are arguments against it, but certainly not that it leads to rape. If anything, it's a substitute for rape. People can live their fantasy life, and then they don't have to act it out. The countries with pornography have less rape than the countries that ban pornography. There's virtually no there's no legal pornography in the Muslim world, where women are in many cases much more mistreated than in the West, where there is pornography. Just to give you an example, and video games, I don't know. Why will playing a video game where you shoot up the enemy have you then go out into a movie theater and shoot people to death? I just don't. In a truly abnormal mind, it might trigger that desire, but the desire was there to begin with. So it's not. I've not seen the compelling data. I'm open to it, but I haven't seen it. Truth is very important. It's unbelievably important. But the desire to win on behalf of your cause is usually stronger than the desire to first tell the truth. One of the many problems confronting the human species. Well, it's great to be with you. Thank you for being with me. And I think that's about it. I'll see you next week. On behalf of Otto and the whole Prager family, bye-bye. Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.